said already, I will talk about device-independent quantum key distribution, and Roger told me that there isn't going to be many people here working on key distribution, although I see that maybe this is now not the case anymore since the audience has a bit changed. but anyway, probably most of the talk will be about what device-independent quantum key distribution actually is and why you should be interested in this. And, well, our results are, so this is like loosely based on a paper that I have together with Renato Renner, but maybe we get to this part in the end, but maybe not. But please help me by asking questions, and I would really like to give the talk such that you understand what I'm saying. So please interrupt any time, or even if maybe I'm not fast enough, let me know, okay? So I suppose that you all know about quantum key distribution, but nevertheless, in order to show what device-independent quantum key distribution does, I have to quickly go back. So this is supposed to be a BB84 protocol, where just Alice sends some photon to Bob, and she chooses a basis and a bit at random, and Bob measures that photon, and he has here, well, a whole lot of apparatus. So he'll have a beam splitter, and then he'll have polarization beam splitter, and then he'll have a detector. And so if this detector clicks, this, or like down here would be measuring in the diagonal basis, and up here would be measuring in the horizontal basis. And then maybe this click would correspond to him measuring a zero. And so they'll do this several times, and they write down the basis that they use and the bits that they get. And then after they finished, they talk over the public authenticated channel, and they compare their results. And they will just only keep the data where they measured in the same basis. And you know the principle, if they Bob measured in the same basis that Alice used for the encoding, he should have gotten exactly the bit that she sent, unless there was an eavesdropper. And so if they will now compare the data they have, they can see whether there was an eavesdropper present and estimate the information an eavesdropper can have, and from this data then can create a key. So far, so good. You all know this. And the security of this key is supposed to be based on physical principles, right? It's based on the fact that Eve cannot measure both bases at the same time. Okay, so this BB84, as you all know it, and it only has one problem, namely it's not secure. And lately there have been quite a few attacks proposed and implemented. So Hoi Kung Lo's group has implemented a few attacks. The attack that I will show you now is by Makarov. And it uses the fact that these detectors that Bob has here, they have a property, namely that one, after they have detected a photon, they need some time until they can detect another photon. So they have some dead time. And if during that time more photons arrive, they might not have time to charge, and they will not be able to click anymore when the photon arrives.
What's the protocol?
The implementation of the protocol, you mean?
Because it's a protocol. The implementation,
oh, this implement,
it's
yeah.
Very important to conceptual peak things apart.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the scheme that I showed you before is not, well.
You never mentioned photodetectors before, right? So,
yes.
No, no, on the previous slide, right? I mean, it's...
Yes, I agree. So the thing that I showed you was not secure, okay?
The photodetectors, so right, on the exact model of the photodetector was here.
Yeah, so I will get to that, right? Yes, but I agree that maybe I should make the difference and say, I mean, the BB84 protocol is secure, but this implementation is not secure, okay?
Because the one-time pad is actually otherwise insecure.
Okay, so what he does is actually quite simple. So he, or Makarov, but what Eve will do in this case to attack, is she will shine light into Bob's detectors and blind them, such they will not be able to detect. As we said, they will like never be able to charge, and they don't click. And she will set up the same kind of device that Bob has in her lab, and now she will get Alice's photon and observe a click in a certain detector. Now what she can do is she modifies here the polarization of the light that she sends in such that this detector does not receive any light and it has time to charge. Then she modifies back and it clicks. And so in this way, Eve can actually force Bob to get exactly the same data as what she has obtained as well. And it's clear that in this case, Alice and Bob cannot have a secure key, right? Because Bob will have exactly the same information as Eve does as well. So this implementation is insecure because of these properties of the detectors. Okay. Insecure. So what happened? I mean, these attacks got a bit of attention lately. So for example, here in Nature User Test, quantum cryptography isn't as invincible as many researchers thought. The commercial quantum key has been fully hacked for the first time. So what happened? I mean, often we say quantum key distribution is based, the security is based on physical principles, and they can only be broken if quantum physics is wrong. So what happened? Has quantum physics been wrong? Or, what was the problem, right? And actually, I also heard a lot of classical cryptographers arguing about this lately. There was a blog by a classical cryptographer, and there was a whole discussion about this, and classical cryptographers going, well, in this case, we can just go back to classical cryptography, where we use some computational hardness. What's the advantage, actually, now of quantum cryptography? And, of course, I don't agree that classical cryptography is the same thing as quantum cryptography, right? And of course, quantum theory hasn't been fooled by this attack. I mean, it still holds. But this attack used this property of the detectors. And so the first thing that I think one should say is that maybe we should be a bit more honest about what quantum key distribution does and what it does not do. And often it's said that the security of quantum key distribution is unconditional. And what is meant that it doesn't use this computational hardness. But it doesn't mean that quantum key distribution doesn't use any assumptions. And actually, it does quite a few. And like one of them, for example, is the fact that Alice and Bob need to have secure laboratories. So this might be a completely silly assumption if you think about it. Of course, this needs to be the case equally in classical cryptography. Eve can just walk into Bob's lab and read the key off his screen or read his data out of his devices, then of course you cannot do cryptography. And I mean, this is silly, but there is nothing in quantum mechanics that prevents Eve from walking into Bob's lab, right? So I mean, this is an additional assumption that you need and that has to be stated clearly. And of course, it's not a disadvantage of quantum key distribution because classical cryptography also needs this assumption. And the second assumption that is usually made in quantum key distribution is that the source of Alice and Bob's detectors, they behave exactly according to a certain model, namely the one that is specified in the security proof. So for example, Alice is supposed to emit single photons. If she doesn't emit single photons, then the security can be compromised. And the same thing for the detector. So as we have just seen, if these detectors are supposed to detect every single photon that gets in, we saw this attack by Makarov, and this uses the fact that the detectors don't just click every single time a photon hits them, but that they can be blinded. So the devices in the current security proofs of quantum key distribution, they need to be specified accurately and also completely, right? So it shouldn't be possible that, for example, Alice's source encodes the data also in other places as the photon that she sends. And another thing is that Bob needs to be able to choose the basis that he uses for the measurement at random. Of course, if Eve knows which basis Bob is going to choose, then she can just measure in the same basis and will not be detected. So Bob needs to have local randomness. And actually in here, so, I mean, this can be implemented quantum mechanically. Here, for example, maybe Bob uses a beam splitter. This is not a priori bad. A beam splitter somehow implements quantum randomness. But together with this fault of the detector in this attack by Makarov, this random choice is actually not given because Eve can force Bob to observe a certain data, so she also chooses the basis for him. And finally, also, classical computation is supposed to be trusted in quantum key distribution. So, for example, Alice and Bob need to be able to estimate correctly whether they had too many errors and how much the information of the eavesdropper is. Otherwise, they might just get something that is not secure. Okay, so these are the assumptions that, yeah? Well, she will. in here, yeah. I mean, she needs to have randomness actually to encode. I mean, she needs to choose also the basis at random. If Eve knows the basis that Alice has used for the encoding, this is just a stat, right? So this would need to be on both sides. They have local randomness. Okay, so how can we prevent the attack that I described before? And that attack that I described before can actually be prevented very easily. And I talked about this attack to, quantum groups at my university, which are not working on key distribution. But they said, well, if Bob is blinded, isn't he stupid? He doesn't see that someone is shining light into his detector all the time. I mean, and indeed, of course, Bob can just put a little lamp on his detector, which will tell him whether the detector is ready or not. And if not all detectors are ready, then he doesn't accept any photons. So somehow we can detect whether he's blinded or not. But I mean, no one told him that he has to check whether he's blinded, right? And what else does he need to check for? Is there something else? Or is this all? And this attack can be prevented, but is there other attacks which use maybe other faults of the devices or...
Does this attack also lower the detection rate at all?
So I think it depends whether Bob actively or passively chooses the basis. Mm-hmm. So I think if he passively chooses the basis, then Eve should basically be able just to force him to click exactly the place that she wants. But Makarov's attack, he also does it with active basis choice, in which case, if Bob happens to choose the wrong basis, then he will just not detect. And but he argues that this is still within a reasonable error rate. So in that case, he would have more noise, but it would still probably pass the right current parameters. Okay, but what I propose is to do something else, namely device-independent quantum key distribution, such that we don't need to put a lamp to prevent every single attack that we can think of, and we think of a new attack and we prevent it with another little lamp. So what we would like to do is we would like to make a new security proof for quantum key distribution, which assumes that the source and detectors are not trusted. So we don't assume anything about what type of quantum system they act on and what is the dimension of the Hilbert space and how they work, what is inside, basically. And I would like to be honest about the assumptions that we still do make, namely all the green stuff is still green, even in device-independent quantum key distribution. So we still have to, of course, assume these secure laboratories. And we have to assume that bases are chosen at random and that we can do classical computation. Now, there is some proposal by Roger Kolbeck to also make this randomness device independent, such that you'd only need to have a little randomness at the beginning, and then you could expand this. And there is some research going in this at the moment. But for what I will tell you now, we assume just that Alice and Bob, they can just locally toss coins. And actually, the scheme that I just talked about, so the BD84 scheme, we cannot make it device independent, but we can consider entanglement-based scheme, and it actually does work to make this device independent. And so what is done is that we think of Alice and Bob sharing this quantum state, and they both choose a basis to measure, and they will obtain the measurement result. And then this whole system is just abstractly modeled as a device which takes an input, namely the choice of measurement of Alice and Bob, and it gives an output, which is the measurement result. Okay? So my whole quantum system, I will want to model it by this probability distribution, basically. And because this is just probabilities of inputs and outputs, it doesn't contain any assumption on what quantum state is inside this box or what dimension of the Hilbert space it is. And if an eavesdropper comes into the game, then of course the eavesdropper will also share part of this entangled quantum state, can also choose a measurement, give an input, and will get an output.
They're basis choices.
I what?
Your U and V are labeled basis choices.
Oh, yes, yes. U, V, and W are the choice of the measurement,
right. Yes,
the basis, for example. Mm-hmm. And the X, Y, and Z are the
In principle, I should not assume the level basis is just
yes.
It's a different choice of something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It could be.
Especially for Eve, yeah. It's, especially for Eve, it could be something else.
Well, it could also for Alice and Bob, since we don't know, we want to assume that they get some whatever device where they push a button and it outputs something, right?
Oh, okay.
And we don't know what this thing does inside.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. So we don't know whether this is a basis.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just
have some
randomness. Yeah, it's just a button.
Okay.
You push and you get an outcome, okay?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so since now we have Eve, this will be a tripartite probability distribution. And there is two ways to go about this. And one assumption that one can make is that this system that Alice, Bob, and Eve share is a non-signaling system. So this, of course, comes from quantum mechanics. You assume that if Alice measure her part of the quantum state, she cannot use this for message transmission to Bob or Eve, etc. So this approach was started by Baratardi and Ken, and they show that even just assuming that this tripartite system cannot be used for signaling, you can show security. And the other approach is to again assume we have some kind of probability distribution, but this comes from measuring a quantum state. So we assume that something quantum is inside, but we don't know what. But either way, the principle that shows security, or that is underlying the security proof, is that when Alice and Bob hear this, their system violates a Bell inequality, then sometimes it's not possible for Eve, by interacting with her part of the system, to know exactly what Alice's outcome is. So, for example, you can imagine that if this system that Alice and Bob share was local, then Eve could just know this local hidden variable. And then Alice's outcome would depend only on the input, and then Eve could, of course, know this if she gets to know the input, and she knows this hidden variable. Okay? And the other way around, it also works. For certain systems, you can show that even given Eve's choices here, Alice's output still must be, in some sense, random to a certain extent. Yes?
In all parties? So
yes.
So for example, I would imagine that Eve could change reduced or the margin of probability distribution for Alice and Bob, because, for example, in an interceptor sent attack, she can do just change.
But well, this is why you need, you will need entanglement based. So you will assume, of course, Eve can send something to Alice and Bob, which might be different, but what we will need non-signaling in the sense that once Alice and Bob have received this system, then they can close their lab, and then they can make a measurement, and then the thing will behave non-signaling. So it might be entangled, but it cannot be used for signaling anymore. So you could imagine in a certain way that you will have a signaling phase where systems are exchanged, but then you can close off the lab, and then from that point on, it's non-signaling. Okay. Okay, how can we model attacks in this abstract situation where Alice and Bob just have these buttons and get the outputs, and we have this box? So, of course, if Eve, this system between... Oh, so I should have said that. So actually what I will talk about now is this quantum case. But I think some people here are working with non-signaling stuff. So from now on, if I say quantum, you can just think in your head that this is non-signaling and it will also work, okay? Okay, so if Alice and Bob and Eve, they have this tripartite quantum system, then how can we model the attack that Eve does? So actually what we can see is that if this tripartite system is quantum, then we consider the system that Alice and Bob share conditioned on a certain input and output of Eve. This will be a new conditional system of Alice and Bob, but of course this system is still a quantum system. Okay? And furthermore, we can consider the marginal system of Alice and Bob, so we can just trace out Eve, we sum over Eve's possible outcomes. And this is the marginal system that Alice and Bob share. So if we trace out Eve, we get Alice's and Bob's marginal system. And so in some sense, you can see here that every attack by Eve, which is a choice of W, then she gets an outcome, corresponds to a convex decomposition of this system that Alice and Bob share. So let me write this. So basically an attack by Eve corresponds to a choice of taking Alice's and Bob's marginal system and making a convex decomposition into several conditional systems such that each of these systems is still a quantum system.
In that equation, it doesn't seem like you have anything about the probability distribution that Eve is putting on W.
Oh, for every single W that she has chosen, the choice of W corresponds to a choice of convex decomposition.
I see.
Okay. This is because this thing is not
signaling. Right, because it's not signaling, it has to be the same for any W. Okay.
Yes. So you can think of the choice of attack, the input, as a choice of decomposition, and her output indicating her which part of the decomposition has actually occurred. So of course you can decompose into more than two parts. Okay. And quantum key distribution, we know that what we need to bound is the probability that Eve can guess Alice's raw key. Okay, we know if the probability that Eve guesses Alice's raw key correctly is bounded, then we can do information reconciliation, privacy amplification, etc. We basically know how to get a secure key, which might be shorter. But so the one thing that we want to know is how big is the probability that Eve correctly guesses Alice's output. Okay. And so for Eve, finding the best possible attack corresponds to an optimization problem. Namely, she wants to maximize the probability that she correctly guesses Alice's outcome, subject to the current constraint that, well, she makes a convex decomposition and each part of the decomposition is a quantum system. Okay. Well, so it seems like so far we haven't gotten anywhere, but actually, what we can use now is there is a criteria that such a probability distribution is a quantum system by Navasquez, Pironio, and Dassin, and it corresponds to writing these probabilities into a matrix in a certain way, that this matrix must be a positive semi-definite. Okay? So there is a semi-definite criterion for quantum systems. And this now allows us to replace this attack by Eve by a semi-definite program. So what we will do if the tag corresponds to solving this semi-definite program, which gives her the best guessing probability. I don't know how much you know about semi-definite programs. Shall I go into more details about that? You can think of linear program if you want. This is who wrote the same kind of thing. So what this tells us basically is that knowing this marginal system of Alice and Bob, this will appear in the optimization problem here. We can plug this thing into a computer and it will tell us how good Eve can possibly guess Alice's outcome. So we can solve this. And even better, what we want, of course, from Alice and Bob's point of view, we don't want to find an attack for Eve, but we want to have a bound on what is the best attack that Eve can possibly do. And now with this semi-definite program, we have this very nice way of going to the dual, and in fact, the dual just gives us an upper bound on this guessing probability of E, okay? So what we see is we can go to the dual, and we will obtain an upper bound on Eve's guessing probability, and basically these are just conditions that it's a quantum system, doesn't depend on these probabilities, and in here I will have the probabilities. So going to this dual, I will get a bound on Eve's guessing probability in terms of Alice's and Bob's marginal system. Yes?
In order to do this, they need to be able to share data about this marginal one.
Yes.
So obviously you need some amount of secure classical information. Classical communication.
You will need to have an authenticated channel, as always.
Sure. But do you need... Are there any issues like needing more communication?
I don't think so, because always in a quantum key distribution you will need to do sampling and estimate how much error you will have.
So it's basically the same, right?
Well, of course it depends how many parameters you will want to estimate, etc. So maybe it could be that you will have a little bit more here because you will want to estimate every single probability, which might not be necessary in all schemes. But it will still be small compared to the total. Yeah. I mean, you can make a small sample and that will be enough.
Okay.
So basically, you already said what is now the nice thing about that, because we have a bound on Eve's guessing probability in terms of the marginal system. It means that from the behavior of the system that Alice and Bob have and that they can see, they can somehow infer how much Eve can possibly know. So from the thing that they have, they can, well, look at it in some sense and decide how much Eve can know. So they can see how secure they are. Okay, any questions? Okay, it seems like you're done, but unfortunately this is not the case. Because what usually happens is to make a key, we will need many systems and not a single system. And of course, if Eve would need to attack each system individually in order to guess the output here of Alice's side, then, well, what we just looked at would be enough. But Eve can, of course, do a coherent attack, and she can just attack all of the systems at once. And the question is there, then, can she somehow attack all these systems jointly such that she knows something more about these outcomes than if she would just attack each of the systems individually? And the case we will now consider, and we will show that it is secure, is the case where when Alice and Bob share several systems such that they might be arbitrarily entangled, but they can be seen as an individual Hilbert space for each input and output. And then actually when Alice and Bob measure, they will only measure on that part of the Hilbert space. Then we will show that this is secure. And so the condition that we make is that when Alice and Bob have several subsystems and they measure the different subsystems, that the measurements on different subsystems commute. So in key distribution, you could practically enforce this by having all of the devices. So you'll need many devices and you will measure everything in parallel. Okay, might get expensive, but you should be able to do it if you really want to. And so what we show is that now that Eve again does her attack, and she attacks several systems at once, then what happens with this guessing probability here is that this semi-definite program just behaves as a tensor product of the individual ones that we have. And you see now that if we can show that this behaves like a tensor product, we can go here to the dual, and we will get a bound which, well, this strictly speaking wouldn't need to be tensor product, but we'll still get a bound which is basically such, tells me that the probability that Eve guesses the outcome of several systems is basically not more than if she would try to guess each system individually. Yes? Yeah?
So, you think
that the matrix gap is larger than this trivial system that attack can be written in this form, or is it something non trivial?
No. So, I mean, of course, that Eve could attack in a tensor product way. This is, of course, the case, because she can't just do an individual attack. But this is that this is actually the best thing to do. This is not obvious. Okay. So, I think this is what we show. And this again. So basically, we show that we can write this program in this way, and then going to the dual, you see that the tensor product is also optimal. Okay, so what have we found? So basically all that we say is that we can show security of a protocol like a Eckert-style entanglement-based protocol that works the usual way. And the only thing that Alice and Bob will need to do is they will need to make sure that when they have several systems that these measurements on the different systems commute. Okay. So what they will do is Alice will send some entangled state to Bob. They will measure at random, just usual as always in Eckert's protocol. And the only thing they need to make sure is that these measurements commute with each other. And then they can estimate, as you said, the probabilities. And actually from these probabilities, they can estimate the error and also the knowledge that Eve could have about these outcomes. Then they can do information reconciliation, so error correction, basically. And then privacy amplification, and they will get a secure key. Okay, that was it. So let me conclude. So what we showed is that we can do device-independent quantum key distribution under this additional condition on the subsystems. So this works both in the quantum case as in the non-signaling case, as I said. And in the quantum case, we need this condition that when we measure different subsystems, then the measurements commute on the different subsystems. In the non-signaling case, somehow a similar analog condition holds, namely that we need to have non-signaling between all subsystems. And in that case, a coherent attack by the eavesdropper is basically not stronger than an individual attack. And we can show full security against most general attacks, and this is composable. So. And actually, in the non-signaling case, it can be shown that this additional condition, namely that we have non-signaling between all systems, is necessary. But the big open question is, of course, whether this is necessary in the quantum case. And we know that it can be relaxed on one side, but we don't know whether it can be fully relaxed or not. The hope is, of course, that this could be removed. And also, I wonder whether there is other applications, because what we basically showed is that this semi-definite program that can describe quantum behaviors or quantum systems behaves as a tensor product in some sense. if we have this additional condition. And this doesn't have anything to do with key distribution. So we started thinking about this because we were thinking about this key distribution, but it could also have applications in other areas. So one thing is that using this same kind of technique, we can show that when you take the XOR of several partially secure bits in the setup, then this is basically also as secure as if I wanted to know every single bit. Okay, so can use the XOR as deterministic privacy amplification function. But maybe it could also have other applications in the context of quantum games. I don't know. If you can think of anything, let me know, please. Yeah, this was it. Thank you.
So, question? Mm-hmm. So, Bell inequality tests have this detector loophole.
Mm-hmm.
And presumably, there's got to be something similar here, that
yes.
if the detection rate is low. So, what kind of assumption are you working with on detection rates?
That you'll be able to do Bell tests. So,
okay.
So I think this, at the moment, it cannot be implemented in because we don't have any loophole free Bell tests. Of course, you could assume something on this loophole, and then you might get away with it. Although I think this is dangerous, right? Especially this detection loophole, because it would be easy, as we discussed in this Makarov
right.
attack, just, for example, that Bob doesn't detect when the wrong thing comes out. So I think in this device-independent setup, you would really want this loophole to be closed. So I would hope that in the future, we'll be able to close it. Actually, I don't know, maybe someone knows just how the experimental, from the experimental side, how it looks like.
Wasn't it that in the ion traps it has been
I think so, right? Because not both loopholes at once, but yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think it's possible to close the detection loophole, right? But not together with the space-like separation. But
right, well, so for Bell inequality test, that's what you want. For QKD,
yes.
I guess
exactly.
It's similar. You want the ability to send through space.
But I think for QKD, for example, the space-like separation wouldn't be that much of a worry to me. Okay.
No, exactly. But
uh-huh.
but what
you need
is
to
instead
the
ability
anyway.
To send over a long distance. Right?
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm. that's right.
Which kind of goes together with
yes.
this.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean that is just where the paper by Zsangers goes as well goes into that direction. We can do heralding on both sides.
Okay.
Right. So the transmission
right.
loss is not a killer for that one because we can do in principle heralding.
Oh, right. So they did it with separate ion traps that were connected.
No.
They haven't done that yet.
No, not
okay.
yet. No. But I mean, so that
yeah,
means
yeah,
there
yeah.
are handles to
right.
to bring it to,
right.
to the application
mm-hmm.
level. Right.
Yeah. So hopefully this will be closed soon. I don't know, but I think it's not that far.
I mean, it's just the possibilities, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To do exciting research on.
Yes.
So you said that there's no ceiling condition that you have, but then you said that you can relax it on the one side?
Oh, not for non-signaling. In the quantum case,
yeah.
So actually this is a work by Marco Toma-Michel, and he has somehow a little bit of a different approach to this way of showing a security, device independent security, but he's like secure on one side, and so on one side he can relax this, but he's not device independent on the other side. And so I think we could put this together, and it would be device independent, but you'd only need such a condition on one side. But in some sense, I mean, Bob is only here to test, right? So this might be okay, but whether it's possible to remove it on both sides, we don't know.
Doesn't the protocol Luis Misanis protocol, which is secure, you only need this on one side?
In the non-signaling case,
yes.
you mean?
Yes.
Well, he claimed so once, but I'm not sure if this is a still the case.
I'm sure.
I don't know. Uh-huh. Yeah, so I think it's quite likely anyway that on one side you don't actually need it, right? Because it's anyway just a test. But whether it can be removed completely, I don't know.
Well, I mean, the one problem would be the memory effect in detectors.
Yes.
And so that's a thing. And wouldn't one be able to give some counterexample to say, just to design something where you have memory effects that could be basically broken?
Well, we know that for this concrete thing, for example, we show, so I said, we can show, for example, that you can use the XOR as a deterministic privacy amplification function. This wouldn't work anymore. But this is maybe not too bad, because you could do you can use two universal hashing, etc. So I think we don't have a counterexample that this is, in general, not possible. If you have one, please let me know, because then I can stop working on that.
Yeah, because, I mean, for sure, I mean, in practice, the memory effect would be the biggest loss.
Yeah, I mean, this memory effect shows that it will surely not, I mean, it's surely not the same setup. I mean, it's not the same thing. And you do have memory effects in practice. I mean, you know this. So in practice, if you will repeat this one after the other, then I don't think this condition is actually satisfied, right? Even though it's assumed in the traditional security proofs, this is not the case in practice. So I really think if I would want to implement this thing, I would want to buy many devices and spread them out. And
I'm sure the vendors would like your approach.
Yeah, I know. Aaron Harrow once asked me whether I'm paid by Idée Conti. Now you say it's not enough to buy one device, you have to buy many.
10, 26.
But even if you have all the devices at once, if there's some pre-shared entanglement in the detectors, that's
the measurements.
Say what's too
good. No, measurements are POVMs, right? So they're implemented. I mean, if you think of them in, you know, Kirk and Warby Hilbert's big picture, they're implemented taking some ancilla state in the detector,
right,
and doing a unitary. And if the ancillas are, if the ancilla states are actually entangled between different detectors, I would think that this condition would fail. Maybe maybe not. But
no, sort of larger measurements on a larger quantum system.
Yeah, but they're like treated as a bunch of separate ones that can really fail.
Oh, you mean entangled between uses?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry.
But isn't that the formulation, because you did not use the tensor product formulation, but the commuting formulation, isn't it? Like a POVM really on the big thing, if you phrase it like that one, commuting?
Yes.
And then it would be basically safe against this pre-entanglement, isn't it?
POVM...
I mean, there's also a thing what, like Reinhard Werner and what is, who...
POVM on a selective set, but then it has a lot of different indices indicating kind of your input for each of the things. And so what is then the condition?
Isn't it as well that, like, if you trace the others out, then those two have to commute or something like that? Marco, do you remember that thing? About, like, the independent things that either you do it as a tensor product, it's like, or the overall... I thought there was some formulation you might be able to use. Because at the moment, you formulate, I mean, did you have tensor product in mind?
Well, we had tensor product in mind in the sense of that this implies, of course, that things commute.
Yeah,
but
sure.
All that we need for the security proof is that the measurements on the different, associated with the different subsystems, they commute.
And that means by tracing out the other system always, or everything else but the one thing. Because if it's a POVM, like Danny said, it's a POVM on the big all signals. So what exactly do you mean by it commutes? Right. There's only one big POVM that measures on all N system at one time. So now when you want to say for the different slots, you can still, I think, formulate something like commuting, isn't it?
Wait,
it doesn't have to measure all at the same time, right?
But it's one POVM for the whole string, right?
Not necessarily. It can output sequentially. As you
Yeah, sure. But I mean, you can have some which initially entangled all your measurement devices, so it's really always becomes a one big POVM, right? So that's what Danny said. So therefore, you have to consider at first like one big POVM.
But you can't stop it being one big POVM by making each measurement one after the other and waiting for the output.
Yeah, but what means one after the other? Right?
Just imagine when you measure shared entangled state. I mean, if you can measure whatever, if the measurements are locked, you can make a big commute, even if they share initially something, right? So the measurements commute, even if there was entanglement there.
Yeah, but that's just to make precise what means the measurement commute, right? Because if you have something previous entangled, so
yeah,
you
I mean,
need some
but
kind
but
of
But I think this is somehow PDF. What we show. I mean, I'm not sure really if I understood the question correctly, but I mean, what we show, I mean, I think if you have an entangled state which determines somehow how to do your measurement, right? I mean, this can be part of the quantum state that they share. And then we assume that somehow there are local measurements. So basically what we show is that exactly this entanglement does not help. If I think of this entanglement as being part of the state that comes in to, from, well, for the key distribution, which I think I can do.
No, it's
in that
might be the graph. And devices from the entangled measure is only one time. Each device to give you numbers. That's a different commute.
No, not necessarily. Yeah, well, this, I mean, what Ethic just said about taking, assuming that the entangled state in the detectors is part of the thing that you've distributed, that, that seems possible at one person.
Yeah, I think if the part of the distribution is a problem, so the source is not trusted, so.
Yeah.
You can prepare any additional entanglements behind the scene.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
As long as the POVM measurements are...
But the measurement can only be on one device.
Yes.
So
at a time.
Yes.
So one
yeah.
measurement of one device must commute with another
yes. yeah.
device.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole assumption.
Yeah, I mean the interpretation of being on one device, that's just an interpretation, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just you have a number for this device and you say, I have this measurement that corresponds to asking
right.
what this device is output, but you don't actually know what the system is doing, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's something much more complicated. But okay, I kind of buy that, yeah.
Any more questions? Not then, no. Let's thank you.